Can you hear me back there, Harvey?
Yes.
All right. Because I can't hear it coming back. That's what, you know, when you're speaking, you always want to hear a certain amount of that. You can tell when it's really going out or not. Now, Dave Jenkins there and Dale are passing out. You might recall I mentioned the chart from the 1960. I gave you the wrong booklet that it was in. It's not in the Book of Revelation. It's in Who is the Beast? Who is the Beast? 1960, Radio Church of God. And this is the enlarged. It's on page 9 in that booklet, if any of you old-timers happen to have it back there. But it this is enlarged from the size it was in the booklet to an 8.5 by 11. Carol Volker down in Miami had it, and so I have it actually, but I have it bound, hardbound, with other booklets, so I can't just lay it out to do it. Where she has the booklet separate, could unstaple it in the middle, fold it out, and have somebody, whoever it was, Kinko or somebody, go ahead and print it. So I just want to give you, I mentioned at the time that I thought it was amazing, thinking back, how they did this. Excuse me. When they didn't have computers back in 59 and 60 when this was being assembled, put together. And I thought it was a pretty good job here. And all of this, we still believe everything you see there on that chart. And there's nothing that I would change on. And of course, you see at the top left, Daniel 7, the four beasts. And that's why I brought it up last time, because we were in Daniel 7. This time we'll be in Daniel chapter 8. And so we can turn over there, but I wanted you to have that. And any of those who could not make the Bible study, let them know, because we have plenty of copies to pass around to others. and I'm trying to get to Daniel chapter 8 here myself. just a quick little review. Daniel chapter 5, you have the introduction of Belshazzar. And of course, at the end of chapter 5, Belshazzar is killed, Babylon is taken. And the date of this, we're quite certain of, and not just us and the church, but I mean historically, it's a certain date, in October of 539 BC. Now, Belshazzar had been reigning in Babylon for quite a number of years. In fact, he came into power. His father gave him co-regency at about 553 BC. Nebuchadnezzar, who had elevated Daniel to what, second in the kingdom, died in 563. And then the one who followed him was Nebuchadnezzar. Now, Nebuchadnezzar was the actual king. This is why a lot of your critics of the Bible for a long time doubted the book of Daniel, because who's Belshazzar? We never heard of him. Nebuchadnezzar followed Nebuchadnezzar. That is true, he did. But then later it was discovered in, I believe, diggings in, was it Nineveh? Or was it, I forgot where it was, that they found and discovered who Belshazzar was. He was the son of Nebuchadnezzar. And Nebuchadnezzar did not stay to rule out of Babylon. He turned it over to his son to be co-regent. And what's interesting about that, now where did Nebuchadnezzar go? Well, Nebuchadnezzar, history tells us, went to fight the Edomites and other Arabs in the areas of northern Arabia. And so at the time that that Babylon fell, Nebuchadnezzar was not there, although he was still the king. And then, of course, the Persian king, Cyrus the Great, is the one who actually became king of Babylon, although it was turned over to Darius the Mede, who he was allied with. But Cyrus was greater, as we will see in chapter 8 here, than Darius. But Cyrus ruled out of Susa, or Shushan, in Elam, or what today is Persia. And that would be southeast of Babylon as far as in direction where he ruled. Now, going back to chapter 5, you may recall that when the handwriting was put on the wall, and of course it stunned and frightened Belshazzar, as I'm sure it would anybody, the mother queen told him that there was a person who interpreted dreams for his father and for his grandfather, actually, Nebuchadnezzar. So during the time that Belshazzar was over co-regent of Babylon from 553 to his death in 539, 14 years, Daniel was not even known by Belshazzar. He was forgotten. He was not certainly second over the kingdom anymore. Who was Belshazzar? And what did he elevate Daniel to when he told him the interpretation of the handwriting on the wall? Third in the kingdom. Why? Because he, Belshazzar, was second in the kingdom, and his father was first. And that's why he was elevated, that is, Daniel was, to number three. Now, in chapter 7 and chapter 8, we go back from 553. Let's take quickly at chapter 7 and verse 1. In the first year of Belshazzar, king of Babylon. The first year of Belshazzar as co-regent and king of Babylon would have been either 554 or 553, right in there. Okay, so this vision that he received was at the time that Belshazzar came into power. All right, now let's go over to chapter 8. Verse 1, in the third year of the reign of Belshazzar, this is before 550, isn't it? Around 550, 551, right in there. Now in the third year, but in both these instances of chapter 7 and chapter 8, Belshazzar doesn't know who Daniel is. Never heard of him. He would hear of him at the evening of his death. Somehow that, yeah. That's kind of a sick way to put it right now. I'm thinking, if I may digress a minute, of changing the Bible study and making this my last one and doing it like I do in Miami and in Fort Myers, which I've done for the last 5 or 6 years, and that is once a month have a Bible study service. In the Bible study service, it's like a regular service. That is, we have three songs, an opening prayer, and a lot of times I will show in a chord, and then I'll take announcements and begin the Bible study. And a lot of times, because of the situation over there, I will stand for the Bible study, and I will go through this study. If there are questions, I will take those and answer them at the same time. And when I finish, then we'll have a closing song and closing prayer, just like a regular service. Now, why do I do that? Well, because, as you probably can tell, when it gets to the third service of the day, I'm just about wore out in my throat, and I have trouble. There was a time when I could actually do four services in one day. That is, in Hickory, I would have the service, and then we would have Bible study like we're doing right now. Then we would jump in the car, scoff down some food, and go back for the afternoon service in Greensboro and do it all over again. But as you get older, you can't do that, and you really just wreck your voice. So, as I've told others, I want to be in it for the long run, not the short run. So, when the new speaking schedule comes out, I want to go ahead and do here what I've been doing for 5 years in the other two churches. And we'll have the Bible study. I've been doing it this way since I've been kind of the new pastor in the area and getting acquainted with everybody. But I want to, because even right now I feel the strain down here in this one part of my throat. So I just wanted to let you know that's what I've been thinking that I want to do, and I'll start doing that, plan to do that later in January. And once a month we'll have a Bible study service, and it's really, in other words, the sermon is the Bible study, whatever we're covering at that time. All right, chapter 8, verse 1. In the third year of the reign of King Belshazzar, a vision appeared to me, Daniel, after the one that appeared to me the first time. which was, when was the first time? 2 years before, in the first year of Belshazzar. This is the third year. So I saw in the vision, and it so happened that while I was looking, that I was in Shushan. Now, either he was there in vision or he actually was there under government, some sort of government work. The citadel, which is in the province of Elam, and I saw in the vision that I was by the river Ulai, or Ulai, which I believe is a canal by a river there, the commentaries mention. Then I lifted my eyes and saw, and there standing beside the river was a ram, which had two horns, and the two horns were high, but one was higher than the other, and the higher one came up last. Now the higher one was Persia, and the lesser one was Media, or the Medes, who had allied themselves with Cyrus the Great. And he had, is quite interesting, because back, if you turn back to chapter 7 again, and in verse 5, the second great kingdom after Babylon, verse 5, and suddenly another beast, a second like a bear, it was raised up on one side and had three ribs in its mouth. It was devouring three ribs. Part of the story, which I didn't tell you last time, was that those three ribs, I did tell you who they were. They were Lydia, which is the kingdom of Lydia, was in what is today Turkey, Egypt, and Babylon. Now, Nabonidus, when he saw that Cyrus was united, Cyrus, by the way, came to power in 558 B.C., about the same time Nabonidus did. Well, actually, Nabonidus came to power a couple years before, after Nebuchadnezzar died. Now, the Medes then allied themselves with the Persians. Nabonidus started looking west to protect himself, so he united Babylon with Egypt and Lydia. And of course, Cyrus would turn on them when he saw that confederation and go after them and conquer them. And he did. That ended Nabonidus's career. And those countries came under Persian rule and would stay that way for over 200 years until Alexander the Great. So when you come back now, chapter 8, and he saw these in verse 3, the two horns, one's higher than the other. Well, the Persian's higher because it's greater. And Cyrus the Great, as he was called, who was prophesied in Isaiah chapter 44 at the end of the book and at the beginning of Isaiah 45, and that he would be the one to conquer the gates of Babylon, which he did, not literally himself, but he did through Darius the Mede. And Darius the Mede came under the authority of Cyrus the Great. So now this also is important because of one other factor, to understand that these two horns are not even. Because you had those who have taught, and this came out even in the Church of God one time here, in which the four kingdoms in Daniel chapter 7, one individual said, well, the fourth kingdom is not Rome. The word Rome is not mentioned in the book of Daniel, which is true, it is not. All right, then who would be the fourth kingdom? The individual said, well, the Greeks are the fourth kingdom. Well, that's absurd when you read the description of the of Greece, that we'll have a great king who will die and four kings will take over and split it all up. That's number three, that's not number four. But people not believing, apparently, that Daniel wrote in 600 B.C., or the 6th century, I should say, B.C., but that it was written by somebody later, because the details is too incredible. It has to be history, not prophecy. Well, no, that is certainly not true. What they do is they say that the first one was Babylon, the second one was the Medes, the third one was the Persians, and the fourth one were the Greeks. Now that is not, as you're going to see here, right in the Medes and the Persians are together, not separate. And the Persians are over the Medes. They are united together. And so that's why you have two horns, but two different sizes. You ever seen a ram that has a horn, usually the same size, aren't they? I haven't ever heard of the one being in an actual RAM, one bigger than the other. But there's a reason for that, as you can see. And now in verse 3, the Bible interprets itself. If you look at verse 20, the ram which you saw having the two horns, they are the kings of who? Media, the short one, and Persia, the long one. Now coming to verse 4, I saw the ram pushing westward, northward. That's what he did. He pushed westward to go after the Egyptians and the Lydians, or Lydianites, I guess you would say, to conquer them. And later, kings following Cyrus actually conquered Greece before Alexander the Great came along. For example, Xerxes the Great, X-E-R-X-E-S, is found in the book of Ezra. And guess who his queen was? Esther. Now, he probably had more than one queen, but one of his queens was Esther, in the book of Esther. But that Ahasuerus, as he is called there in chapter 1, verse 1, or whatever it is apparently the Jewish title for the Persian kings that they used. Not that that was his name. And just like Pharaoh is a title. He goes westward to conquer and to break up the confederation that Nabonidus was forming, really as a, we do it today. What's the purpose of NATO? Supposedly. A confederation that we'll all, if one is attacked, we will all come together to help you out, right? Against the communists, the Russians, and East Europeans. That's what it was all set up originally for. Well, they were doing the same thing in that day and age, too. But in this case, it didn't work. Verse 5, and as I was considering, suddenly a male goat came from the west across the surface of the whole earth without touching the ground. He was flying pretty fast, in other words. And the goat had a notable horn between his eyes. So here you have a ram with two horns. Now you have a goat with one horn between its two eyes coming. And he is moving so fast. He's conquering so quickly. Nothing is in his way. And that's exactly what happened with Alexander the Great. Verse 6, then he came to the ram that had two horns, which I had seen standing beside the river, and ran at him with furious power. And I saw him confronting the ram. He was moved with rage against him, attacked the ram, and broke his two horns. And there was no power in the ram to withstand him. But he cast him down to the ground, he trampled him, and there was no one that could deliver the ram from his hand. Therefore, the male goat, of course, that's Greece and Alexander the Great that conquered the Persians in 330 or 331. Let me look at my inspired notes back here. I think it was 330 BC when they were conquered the Persians. And then later, it was, 323 that Cyrus died suddenly. Don't hold me to those dates. I think that's correct, but I'm in the ballpark, put it that way. Verse 8, therefore the male goat grew very great, but when he became strong, the large horn between his eyes was broken, and in place of it, four notable ones came up toward the four winds of heaven. When Alexander suddenly died, apparently of a fever, he was about 33 years old, I believe is what I've read. There actually were seven generals who fought it out for 7 years, and it came down to these four that were able to slice up the kingdom. One of them, his name was Ptolemy. These are Greeks, by the way. And Ptolemy got Egypt, which included at that time the Sudan and what today is also Libya. And later, the city of Cyrene was built on the northern coast of Libya near what today is Benghazi. And you read of in the New Testament, in the book of Acts, of who was it that came from Cyrene? Was it Cyrus? Yeah, from Cyrene. Where did somebody else, I thought, came from Cyrene? A Cyrenian, I think that term is used. Who, what? Simon, yeah, carried the cross, okay. He was from Cyrene, a city built by the Greeks after Ptolemy. After Alexander's death, Ptolemy got Egypt, out on the western side of Egypt, what was then Egypt, he built a city and named it Cyrene. To the south, all the way down to the end of the cataracts on the Nile River, which is at the city of Khartoum, the capital of the Sudan today. So he had all of that was his kingdom. And actually all the way to Ethiopia too. The other one went to Seleucid, S-E-L-U-C-I-D. Seleucid got Syria. Damascus became his capital, but not Syria as you look at it today on a map. His territory went all the way to Persia, past Babylon. Excuse me. But he chose to have his capital and sphere of influence to be in Damascus. Ptolemy, of course, in Memphis, which today, Old Cairo actually is the ancient area of where Memphis was and the capital of Egypt during the Ptolemies and the pharaohs, too. The other two do not play a part in the Bible, but just to tell you who they were, Thrace, the third king, got Thrace, which included Macedonia, Greece, and all of those areas of what is in Europe. Not all of Europe as the Romans had. Actually, Macedonia, Thrace was not that, because the fourth guy got Macedonia itself. By the way, Alexander the Great, he came from Macedonia, not from Greece. And Philippi, the capital, was named after his father, King Philip. And he was the son of Philip. And he came out of Macedonia. But, of course, it was spreading the Greek culture everywhere they went. So, verse 9. And out of one of them, came a little horn, which grew exceedingly great toward the south, toward the east, and toward the glorious land. And it grew up to the most to the host of heaven, and it cast down some of the host and some of the stars to the ground and trampled them. Well, stars have always been symbolic of angels. Now, whether it's out of Satan here attacking and going after them, we're really getting into the time of Antiochus Epiphanes, who was one of the Seleucids, who would come and set up the first abomination of desolation. Verse 11, he even exalted himself as high as the prince of the host. Who's the prince of the host? High as of, even as of Christ, God, the Lord. And by him the daily sacrifices were taken away, and the place of his sanctuary was cast down. Because of transgression, an army was given over to the horn to oppose the daily sacrifices, and he cast truth down to the ground. He did all this, and he prospered. And you'll read more about him in the 11th chapter of this book. Well, then I heard a holy one speaking, and another holy one said to that certain one who was speaking. Now, he is seeing this in vision, right? How long will the vision be concerning the daily sacrifices and the transgression of desolation, the giving of both the sanctuary and the host to be trampled down underfoot? He said to me, for 2,300 days, then the sanctuary shall be cleansed. Well, if you have a center margin note on verse 14, a little number one by the word days, it means evening and mornings. That is the evening and morning sacrifice. So to be exact days, it would be half of that or 1,150 days. Now, if you have a chance to read something about the abomination of desolation that took, there's been more than one. There certainly was one in 168 to 165 B.C. That's the one being talked about here by a man who was called Antiochus Epiphanes. And but there's another one, too. How about when Jerusalem was surrounded by armies in 70 A.D. and the temple was destroyed, burned, what could burn, and not one stone, as Christ said, will be left upon another. And certainly that was an abomination that took place there. But this one is even more so because of the religious factor brought into this, which the Roman general Titus did not do that so much as I haven't read that he ever did in 70 AD. He simply just destroyed it outright. But here, this Antiochus Epiphanes, of course, would set up a statue to Jupiter Olympus in front of the altar, which is outside of the temple building. He would sacrifice swine's flesh on the altar. Any Jews who came in or even practiced circumcision would be killed. He did slaughter over 40,000 Jews. He took 40,000 and sold them into slavery. This, of course, resulted in a great uprising by the Maccabee family that gained forces together to fight them first in what we would call guerrilla warfare. And as they became stronger and they became very good at what they were doing, they decimated Antiochus Epiphanes' troops in the area that we would call today Palestine. It took them 3 years to do it. When you read about it, Josephus tells us that the date there that the temple was, the abomination was set up. Why didn't I bring it? The abomination was set up in the month of Chislev, C-H-I-S-L-E-V, which is in the wintertime. And I believe, what was the day that it was set up on? Anyhow, 3 years to the day it was cleansed by the Maccabees, who came in and reconquered it, took it back, cleansed the temple in the same month 3 years later. Now, I thought about that a little bit because some have questioned or wondered, what is the prophetic meaning of the verse 14 of those 1,150 days? Now, 3 years, 360 in prophetic years, times three, what is that, 1260, or no, three times, 3 times 6, 18, and 3 times 3 is, well, that's not quite right either. Something there about the 3 years. Now, 1,260 days, that's 3.5 years, isn't it? 1,150 is just a little 70 days less than that. Apparently, during that time, and maybe it was because it wasn't at the outset, certainly the abomination, but the sacrifices were cut off, and then it had to be restored once again. And it was when the Maccabees returned. As a result of that, certain things happened. The high priest at the time, his name I believe was Onias, capitulated with Seleucid to save his job and everything. Nevertheless, he lost his job because of that. Seleucid then was picking the high priest and deciding who it would be. And not Seleucid, but Antiochus Epiphanes. And compromising one's beliefs and everything doesn't win it over, but he tried to save his hide and everything, went along and accepted the Hellenization of the Jewish culture. That is, the inculcation of the Greek culture, Hellenizing, into Jewish culture. The liberal party called the Sadducees came out of this. The backlash party that fought and was along with the Maccabees to overthrow and return everything and cleanse the temple became known as the Pharisees. Before all of this, these parties did not exist. And they came out of this abomination of desolation, this which was upon them for 3 years there in Jerusalem and throughout the country from Jerusalem. They were a conquered people. Everything was desecrated, not just only the religion, but everything in their homeland, too. So coming back here, this up through verse 14, now we get the interpretation in the latter half here of chapter 8. So it happened when I, Daniel, had seen the vision, verse 15, was seeking the meaning, that suddenly there stood before me one having the appearance of a man. And I heard a man's voice between the banks of the Ule, who called and said, Gabriel, make this man understand the vision. Gabriel, of course, is the one who came to tell Mary that what was conceived in her womb. Gabriel, we have always believed, is an archangel. That there are three in the Bible. One of them is fallen, Lucifer. And the other one is Michael, mentioned also here in the 12th chapter of this book. Now, it doesn't say anywhere that Gabriel is an archangel. But he obviously is more than your regular angel. I mean, he's a higher in position or stature, if you would put it that way, because of how he is used by God. And he needed, as you will see later in the 9th chapter, the help from Michael to come to Daniel to answer his prayer for the 21 days that Daniel was fasting about the 70 years of rest that had been prophesied in the 25th chapter of the book of Jeremiah. So Gabriel is a very important angel, let's put it that way. And he's used by God in very important matters in history. Verse 17, so he came and near where I stood, and when he came, I was afraid and fell on my face. But he said to me, understand, son of man, that the vision refers to the time of the end. It's not for now, Daniel, it's for the time of the end. But like so many of these prophecies and visions, it's dual. It's more than one fulfillment. And we know that the abomination of desolation, when it included religion, was fulfilled once already by Antiochus Epiphanes in 168 B.C. Now, another thing to note here in verse 17, I fell on my face. Now, every time that an angel of God appears to a person, they fell on their face, not on their back. Now, when they fall on their back, it's a demon. And when you watch these Benny Hinn healing healing people, you know, be healed and hit them on the forehead, he has a person to catch them. What direction do they fall? On their back. Always, without any exception, when it is an angel of God, or even Christ appearing as a man, as he did in the Old Testament on a few occasions, they fall on their face. Now, when it's Christ, they don't get up. Joshua 5, when the one over the heavenly host comes, it is obviously Christ. He falls on his face. Take your shoes off, Joshua. This, he tells him to get up. You don't worship me, you worship God. And but he couldn't tell the difference, probably. I mean, I haven't ever seen an angel. I don't think any of us here in this room have seen one in their a certain amount of their splendor. So he fell on his face, and that will happen again later in this book. And verse 18, now as he was speaking with me, I was in a deep sleep with my face to the ground, but he touched me and stood me upright on my feet. And he said, look, I am making known to you what shall happen in the latter time of the indignation, for at the appointed time the end shall be. Now I've used that phrase because it appears five times in the book of Daniel, at the appointed time. That I can say to you, I know when Christ is going to return. Yeah. Or I know when the tribulation's going to begin. But seriously, that's why we have to always be ready. Because it's not going to happen at a time that we can just determine it's going to happen at this time coming up. It's going to happen at the appointed time. Now, we're in the time of the end. How long is the time of the end? I don't know. God only knows. But at the appointed time, during the time of the end, it will break open and it will happen. And that is in God's time schedule. So that's an important thing to keep in mind. Always it's at the appointed time, which means we need to be ready always because we don't know the appointed time. Verse 20, the ram which you saw having the two horns, they are the kings of Media and Persia. And the male goat is the kingdom of Greece. The large horn that is between its eyes is the first king, Alexander the Great. Now, this, by the way, what verse 20 and 21, if you just turn back to page to chapter 7, and if you read there in verse 6, after this I looked, and there was another like a leopard, which had on its back four wings of a bird, its four divisions. The beast also had four heads, and dominion was given to it. Well, that agrees with what we just read as you turn back to chapter 8, verse 20 and 21. That right there shows clearly that the fourth kingdom cannot be Greece. The fourth kingdom, Greece is the third kingdom in chapter 7. And then in chapter 7, as you go on there in verse 7 and 8, you have the fourth kingdom, which is unlike all the others. Now in verse 22, as for the broken horn and the four that stood up in its place, four kingdoms shall arise out of that nation, out of Greece, but not with its power. It won't have the power that Alexander had, but each one individually, particularly Seleucid and Ptolemy, will have a certain amount of power, nothing compared to the power that Alexander had, though. In the latter time of their kingdom, that is, the divided ones, when the transgressors have reached their fullness, a king shall arise, having fierce features, who understands sinister schemes. Now, this is where one individual had thought that, well, see, this is talking about in the time of the end, it's going to be a Greek king who will come and set up the abomination of desolation at the end time. No, it isn't. You have to look at all what the Bible speaks about on this subject, and you'll see both in Daniel and in the book of Revelation that this is going to transfer or be transferred over to that fourth kingdom, which is Rome, because Rome is going to conquer both the Seleucids and the Ptolemies and become the fourth great kingdom officially, I guess, of the way history looks at it, in 63 B.C. verse 24, his power shall be mighty, but not by his own power, and he shall destroy fearfully and shall prosper and thrive. He shall destroy the mighty and also the holy people. Now, there's a dualism in this, of course, because this did happen. Antiochus Epiphanes was one, he was Greek, and a Greek descendant. By the way, Cleopatra, she was one of the last of the Ptolemies. She was Greek. She was not Egyptian, descended from the Greek rulership. Verse 25, through his cunning, he shall cause deceit to prosper under his hand, and he shall magnify himself in his heart. He shall destroy many in their prosperity. The King James says, in peace he will destroy many. In peace he will destroy many. He shall even rise against the prince of princes, but he shall be broken without human hand. Now, Antiochus Epiphanes did not rise against the prince of the princes. This one is the dualism of the prophecy, the one at the time of the end. The one called the beast in Revelation 13. The one in Revelation 19, the beast who will be thrown by Christ into a lake of fire along with the great false prophet at that time. So you have two different, in verses 23 through 26, you have two different fulfillments here taking place. One already has, one is yet to come. Let's see, verse 26, and the vision of the evenings and the mornings, which was told, is true, is true. Therefore, seal up the vision, for it refers to many days in the future. Well, from the time that Daniel received it, the first fulfillment was many days in the future from Daniel's time. And of course, then it's going to be more than 2,000 years after the first fulfillment before the second and final fulfillment, and this individual will stand up to Christ. Now, the Roman Empire, after Rome fell and then it was resurrected, none of those individuals over the last two millenniums that were crowned as emperor of the Holy Roman Empire, they were not Romans. They were not Latins either. They were of the Germanic tribes and background, from the time of Justinian, who was an Illyrian, to Charlemagne, who was a Frankish king, which was a German tribe, by the way, not French, all the way up to Napoleon, who was from his family came from Lombard, northern Italy. They were Germans. The Lombards were a Germanic tribe. He came out of Corsica and became early in life the ruler of the chief general of the French army, right out of the French Revolution period of time. All of them, or Charles V or Otto the Great, they were all Germanic. None of them were Latin. I say that because this individual starts out to be one of the kings of the north. Antiochus Epiphanes is one of the kings of the north in Daniel chapter 11. He's of the Seleucid Empire. He is conquered, not him, well, he left Jerusalem because the Romans were attacking his forces in is either Crete or Cyprus, and coming to attack and land troops on the shore of what today is Lebanon, and to go after him. So he had to leave and go back to fight that battle, and part of that is the reason why the Maccabees were able to conquer and retake Jerusalem and all of that, because Antiochus Epiphanes had to be drawn away. Was not able to come back with full force to engage the Maccabees. Anyhow, when it says here in the latter days, one of them actually will be a part of the fourth kingdom, a part of that fourth kingdom, and that fourth kingdom is a resurrection of the Roman Empire, Holy Roman Empire. And how do I know that? Well, I read the seventh chapter, which says very clearly that this third kingdom, which is Greece, is to be replaced by the fourth kingdom, which is Rome, that will be unlike any of the others, and they have a little horn with it. Then I go to Revelation chapter 13 and read that, and it's very clear that the fourth kingdom, obviously through history, has been the Roman Empire, not the Greeks. The Greeks have not been resurrected 10 times. It's been the Romans. So that tells me here that it's not a Greek who is going to do this at the very time of the end. It is one, the Romans had conquered the Seleucids, conquered the Ptolemies, and ruled over the whole area. When Christ came, who was in charge? The Romans. And they would continue to be in charge in the Middle East, clear up to the period in which they finally fell in 476. Let me finish this here. So the evenings and the mornings, by the way, that might be something in the future. The 1150 days, it may not be that the sacrifices are cut off for 1260. That's the time times and half a time. It may continue because the difference between the two numbers is 70 days, right? And what did I say? No, 110 days. 1260 minus 1150 would be 110. Possibly the beast will allow the sacrifices to continue for a period of time before it's cut off. I don't know. We'll have to see. Somehow that 1150 fits into the scheme of things. I can't say that I absolutely and dogmatically know. Verse 27, and I, Daniel, fainted and was sick for days. Afterwards I rose and went about the king's business, and I was astonished by the vision, but no one understood it. He went about the king's business, but the king didn't know him. Nebuchadnezzar did. Belshazzar didn't. And so he was kind of a underling and responsible of whatever the king's business was, but the king didn't know him as as Nebuchadnezzar did. Well, I think it's time we better quit right there. But if you have questions or anything, write them up, send them to me, and I'll certainly try to.